Welcome back to What a Ride, brought to you by Radio Sydney for Australian Broadcasting Media. I'm Rupert Guinness, and with me is Aaron S. Lee, reporting from the US. I'm in sunny Sydney at the moment. We're covering all sports, but particularly cycling this week in the aftermath of the Two Down Under, and as the summer of cycling in Australia continues with the Cadel Evans Road Race in Geelong, and then the Herald Sun Tour, and then as the season starts veering up towards Asia, and then into the Middle East and back to Europe, we're going to talk about how the season started, and what's the fallout of the first major races, particularly the Tour Down Under. Aaron, how are you feeling after the first couple of races have got up and going?
Well, I'm feeling really, really good. Of course, I didn't have the workload that you did. I was not on the ground there in Adelaide at the Tour Down Under this year. I was here in the U.S. And of course, I'm feeling a little envious at the moment, due to the fact that you said you're in sunny Sydney, as we're enjoying, even though I'm in New Orleans and it's not quite as cold as the eastern coast of the U.S., we're under a pretty big cold snap over this last week. I don't know if you've seen that over the news. So it's been a bit chilly, and I'm a bit bundled up at the moment, but I'm glad you're nice and enjoying the summer there in Sydney, bud.
Yeah, look, it's I'm saying in Sydney it's been nice. I mean, down in Victoria where the Cadel Evans Road races and also where the Sun Tour will be, they've had some pretty bad weather. They had floods down there in Geelong, and, what I've last heard is that the floods are going to abate, but you sort of wonder what the debris on the road will be like. But I guess we'll hear the fallout of that next week after the race is held. While we're at it, while we're talking about cross-global connections and everything, I guess we should spare a thought over in Spain, where the giant Alpecin team, and they had that horrific accident where six of their riders were struck in Alicante by a car, a woman driving the car on the wrong side of the road, and she's been charged, but the courts will deal with that case. But I think foremost for the riders such as John Degenkolb, who was taken to hospital, and a number of others were taken to hospital, a very serious crash. Obviously, it could have been a lot worse, so I'd be grateful for that. But I guess certainly wish them all the best with their recovery, and not just those guys, but the other members of the giant Alpecin team, who I know were pretty shocked by it all here in Australia.
Well, no, even talking to Ryder Hagendahl, he said just the day after that it really affects everyone in the pro peloton when they hear news like that. It reminds them that everyone's vulnerable, and that, you know what, it's pro cycling, it is a sport, it is a bit of a game, but it also shows that these guys do take their lives on the line when they go out there, not only to race, but when they're out there training on the road as well. And for everyone to be a little bit more aware of each other, both cyclists and motorists, I know that's a hot debate, it's a hot button to push, but for everyone just to be a little bit more aware and a little bit more courteous of each other.
Yeah, the situation wasn't too dissimilar to what happened to Amy Gillette a number of years back, and I know some people were mentioning that, and that's obviously the drastic difference of how of the fallout of what could have happened. As I said, fortunately it wasn't worse than what it was, but it certainly was still serious. And I guess we use this moment, we usually say at the end of the show, stay safe out there, a metre matters. It's probably worth just mentioning that now early in the show. Stay safe, a metre matters. And as you said, Aaron, everyone just look out for each other, whether you're in a car or you're on a bike, just be safe.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well said, Ruth.
Well, look, we got the show off to a bit of a running start there. How about we'll have a listen to some of your music, Aaron, and then we'll come back and then we'll have a little bit of a review of the Tour Down Under, to talking about fallouts. Obviously Australia did very well there, but listen to some music and then we'll chat all things good and bad about the Tour Down Under 2016.
Long broken arm of human law.
You're listening to What a Ride, and I'm Rupert Guinness, and with me on the line is my co-host Aaron S. Lee from the United States. Aaron, nice bit of music as always to get the show into a right sort of groove. I'm in the mood. But tell me, the Two Down Under was an interesting race for many reasons. There was a lot of talk before the race that there weren't the big name stars like a Chris Froome or Alberto Contador or Alejandro Valverde or whatever. The race unfolded, and for Australia, it was a huge success for the Australian riders. Simon Gerrans' record fourth overall victory. We saw Richie Port win on Wollunga Hill for the third successive year. Every stage was won by an Australian. Four of those stages were won by Orica Greenedge, for whom Gerrans rides for. We saw Gerrans win, Port second. Sergio Henao from Colombia was third, but in fourth place was a great young rider coming up, Jay McCarthy. And I think the only spoils for the foreign riders was the team's classification. Which went to Cannondale, and as I said, Sergio Henao, who got the King of the Mountains jersey. Aaron, I've got to ask you, I mean, a lot of people were saying that as successful as the race was for Australia, do you think that success in the form of the Australian riders could deter the foreign riders from wanting to come down under and give this race a crack?
Well, you kind of have to question that, don't you, Rube? Because obviously the Tour de San Luis had Quintana, Nibali, Sagan, and of course, in previous years at the Tour Down Under, we've had riders, sprinters such as Andre Greipel or Marcel Kittel on hand. None of those riders were here at the Tour Down Under this year. And obviously, you mentioned that the race was completely dominated by the Australians. It was a great race, though, nonetheless, especially if you were an Australian fan. But the riders that won, the guys like Richie Port and Simon Gerrans, as you mentioned, and of course, Caleb and young Jay McCarthy, these are still some of the best riders in the world. And they pack a lot of star power of their own.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's not like they're not just Heffron Park heroes, are they?
No, not at all.
obviously Caleb Ewan's performance was stunning in its own way, because obviously there was a lot of pressure on and expectation on Caleb to come up with the goods and win a World Tour race. He got he obviously had a great summer with the Criterium Series, and he won the National Criterium Championship. Then he got that win in the People's Down Under Classic, the Criterium in Adelaide, 2 days before the TDU began. But then with all that, there was all this expectation of whether he can actually do it on a road stage at World Tour level. Okay, he won a stage of the Tour of Spain last year, but this was on his home turf, and the expectation was massive. And we saw how well he won that race, stage one, and in stage six. He smashed it. He absolutely smashed it. The stage into Adelaide on the last day, he would have won by about three lengths. It was almost like two races. And his position, he's so low and aerodynamic on the bike. The hype about the guy is he's matching the hype very much so, I think.
Rube, seeing some of the images come back, and of course watching it on television, but some of the still images of Caleb so low on that top tube and over the stem and handlebars, it's almost he's riding below the bike, it seems. But he's an immense talent. But again, we still haven't really seen him, at least in 2016, we haven't seen him compete against some of those world heavyweights, so to speak. And it'll be interesting to see. That was where I thought the race really lacked, was in the sprinter field. Now, I know we obviously had guys like Mark Renshaw available. We had Walter Whipper, who won stage six, who's moved up from TriPac. He's a Cannondale Neo Pro. You mentioned Cannondale earlier. Marco Kump, who's made his move back to World Tour, riding with Lamprey and Merida. But he didn't have a lot of world-class sprinters as competition on those races. So it'll be interesting to see just exactly how well he'll continue to do as the year progresses. But so far, you got to like what you see. Seven wins in the month of January.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's going to be interesting to see. I think he's going to be doing Tirreno Adriatico this year, and that's probably where he'll come up against someone like Cavendish. Obviously, he's down to meet Cavendish at the Cadel race, but we're talking at a higher level race. And I was doing my maths. Now, I'm not very good with maths, but my understanding is that the first time we'll actually probably get to see, say, Caleb up against a full field of all the big sprinters. I mean, he's raced against all the top sprinters, you know, one-on-one in various races, but where we'll get, you know, all the guys, the Greipels and all those other big, strong sprinters all at once will probably be in the Giro d'Italia. So that's going to be a massive... I'm going to be really excited when that first stage of the Giro comes through and those sprinters teams all start fighting and jostling for position. It's going to be a great start to that Giro. I can't wait till it comes. Obviously, we've got a lot of time before that happens with classics and everything, but I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, you know, obviously, we've seen Caleb race against Kittel and Greipel in the past, the People's Choice Classic, 2 years ago, and he came in third. He showed that he could go elbow to elbow with these guys. We haven't seen him yet compete against them and take the win, and I think that's where it's going to be intriguing to see, as you say, at the Giro, if not before.
Yeah, and that's what I was having a chat to Mark Renshaw, obviously, who on Dimension Data team, and he's going to be riding again for Mark Cavendish. But he said, you know, that the big danger for Caleb will be up against those big sprinters, because he said, you know, one of his assets is his small size, but he said big guys can move small guys out of the way pretty easily. So I guess you know, I think Caleb won't be shy about taking them on, though. But really looking forward to it. Look. You're listening to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee. We're going to take a little break now, a little bit of music again, and we're going to come back, still talk to Down Under. I think we'd love to talk a little bit about Gerrans' win and how Orica Green Edge raced their race, and as to how the other teams tried to take them on but were unable to. You're listening to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee, and we're talking Two Down Under 216 and the fallout. And we've spoken about sprinters, but we have mentioned about Simon Gerrans getting a record fourth win. Simon Gerrans, who rides for the Orica Green Edge team. Aaron, there was a point there, though. We thought that Simon's season was going to continue on as it did last year, when he had seven crashes and missed out on a large part of the season because he was sidelined through injury. Now, on the stage to Stirling in the Two Down Under, he came a cropper again. One of the riders fell down in front of Darryl Impey, his lead-out man, and Simon had nowhere else to go but over the handlebars and on top of Darryl Impey and land on his knee. Now, fortunately, that... while that crash probably cost him the stage win to Stirling, it didn't put him out of the race, and he was able to back that up with back-to-back stage wins to get the race lead, and finally he managed to pull off a record fourth win. Aaron, this guy, Simon Gerrans, he continues to astound us, doesn't he, with his resilience and also his precision to still train and peak, to reach a peak for every race. It's just been like accidents like last year just crueled what possibly could have been a great season.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. Of course, you mentioned stage two. Of course, his misfortune was a young Australian, Jay McCarthy's good fortune, and that he was able to claim that and slide into the leader's jersey and lift that off Caleb Ewan from the day before. That was just a fantastic effort by McCarthy. But then you look at Simon, and you're right. You're thinking, oh, is it a repeat of 2015? But then you see him, the very next day. You question, like, obviously he's found the fountain of youth. I didn't get a chance to see him up close this year at the Nationals and the Tour Down Under like you have, but each year he seems to look better and better and ride better and better. And then you also look at the team. His team was really primed and ready for this. The Tour Down Under means a lot. It means a lot to him. It means a lot to the team. Just an amazing performance. He just the man seemingly defies age.
Yeah, he certainly does, and I think, you know, we mentioned Darryl Impey, his lead-out guy. I mean, Darryl also had a terrific Tour Down Under, not just in helping Simon Gerrans, but also Caleb Ewan. I mean, Darryl Impey is really becoming one of those sort of must-have riders to have on your team, and fortunately for Orica Green Edge, he is on their team. And I think, we spoke about the domination of Orica Green Edge in the race, and they really were the dominant team. But as you said, you know, it was interesting seeing the lime green of Cannondale there. Just a quick word though about Skye, who came into the race, talking about Geraint Thomas being their main card, Geraint Thomas being their main card, but Sergio Henao, who Colombian climber who finished third overall and got the King of the Mountains jersey, obviously he was the form rider for them, and as we saw in that last stage, he tried to go with Richie Port when Richie went with 1.1k to go, but I'm sure we'll see more of Henao later this year. But so it's not like, you know, Orica Green Edge just had were gifted at the race, were they? I mean, they had to fight and they had to take that domination and assert themselves, because other teams were trying to throw what ammunition they had against them.
No, and especially BMC.
Exactly, and we saw there, you know, and we saw some fantastic riding where BMC rode strongly, but first Rowan Dennis, the defending champion, he was their designated leader, and Richie Port sacrificed his early opportunities, particularly on the corkscrew climb, to try and help Rowan. But then, you know what happened the night before the last day, or the night, Rowan started, his legs weren't up for it towards the end, and he sacrificed his chances to help Richie Port. So that was pretty amazing. Amazing to see a team sort of switch their priorities, but not lose the race. And certainly they could have come out of it with nothing to show for it. But in the end, Richie Port not only got that stage win, but he managed to finish second overall at a meagre 9 seconds. And when you think that he lost 8 seconds, Aaron, the day before when there was a split coming into the finish, it could have been 1 second separating Gerrans and Port.
Well, you got to love how Richie was downplaying his form all throughout January through the Nationals and from the start of the Tour Down Under. And then he just completely, as he has done the 3 years in a row, he's completely dominated Wollongong Hill. It was great to see. And you're right. You know,
you're spot on, Rupa, regarding the teamwork between Richie and Rowan. It's great, and it starts to make me think, we've discussed this in the past, I've kind of doubted what kind of chemistry and the strategy of having two supposed Grand Tour captains at the Tour de France this year with Richie and American TJ Van Garderen. But I'll tell you what, if they can possess this kind of teamwork and chemistry and a 1-2 punch that BMC showed at the Tour Down Under with Port and Dennis, I'm excited.
Yeah, well, look, you know, we haven't mentioned it yet, but, you know, coming up on the show, we've got as one of our special guests, Alan Piper, the sport manager for BMC. He's well known in Australian cycling circles, but he's a very interesting guy. And he, in this interview, we'll listen to it a bit later, but in the interview, he talks about how well Rowan and Richie worked together, how they plotted this plan, which in the end got Richie into second overall and with his stage win. But he also said, just with a view to the future, that now Richie has in Rowan Dennis an absolute number one lieutenant for the future, not just in next week's races or whatever. He's talking about longer term and possibly even in the Grand Tour. So, but enough of me talking about Alan Piper. We can listen to Alan Piper in a bit later. But just a quick question, Aaron. Anyone else stood out for you in the race that sort of we might have missed in our little review here?
Well, I've got to go. You know, we were speaking of Cannondale. We're talking the Lime Green. I've got to go with the Canadian, Michael Woods. You know, and as a matter of fact, the entire Cannondale team. You know, Michael Woods, Neo Pro, first year making his World Tour debut. Also, Patrick Bevan, who we've talked about in the past. We've covered with former Avanti rider, the reigning New Zealand National Time Trial Champion as of a few weeks ago. Him making his debut, finishing sixth. On the Sterling stage, and then also finishing in the top 10, finishing 10th overall on GC with teammate Woods at 5th overall. And then also, of course, they've acquired Neo Pro and sprinter Wouter Whippet, one of Bevan's rivals from Draft Pack last year. So in a Stage 6 winner from last year, as we had mentioned, there's a lot of talent on that team, including Simon Clark, which I'd like to find out from you, where was Simon this week? Did you talk to him? Where was he? We didn't see him on the results, but I do know firsthand from the guys at Cannondale that he was instrumental on placing these young Neo Pros in the right position and yep. getting them where they need to be, and that he was a real road captain, and they just they sang his praises all week long. But this Michael Woods, an amazing rider and one to watch for.
Yeah, certainly. I love these sort of stories of people coming from other sports into cycling, and then you know, really exciting people by showing what they've got. This is their raw potential, you know, and wait till they start to harness it. And now, you know, Michael Woods is going to be so focused on it. And he's not, you know, he backs himself, doesn't he? He has so much enthusiasm and he backs himself. And, you know, you still sort of feel you're a long way from seeing the best of Michael Woods.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. Of course, you mentioned a crossover sport, him coming from, I think, middle distance running. Is that correct, Rupe?
That's right, yeah. 1,600 metres, or the mile, basically. And I think, I'm pretty sure he's done a sub-4-minute mile, but, anyway, round about there. But he was obviously a very good runner.
No, absolutely. And talking to Michael, and I forget, how old is he? Is he, 29?
I think 29. I've written 29 in a story, so I guess we better take it as fact.
Okay. Well, I won't go to pro cycling stats and check right now, but I think he was 29. I know when talking to him this week for a piece on Canadian Cycling Magazine, I talked to him. I think it was right after the second or third stage, and he had mentioned that I said, were you ever in doubt that maybe this wasn't going to happen? He said maybe 3 or 4 years ago he thought that maybe the opportunity to go World Tour had passed him by, but that he always believed that he would get there, and that he was just really enjoying the moment, because here he was surrounded by some of the very cyclists that he had idolized and that he had dreamed that one day he could perhaps ride with. And that was to me, that really touches me, because it's you actually get to see these athletes living their dream.
Yeah, well, look, speaking of dreams, I think it's about time we have a little bit of a break, Aaron. We listen to some more music. We listen to What a Ride. But when we come back after this next song, we're going to, as I said, we're going to listen to Alan Piper and to see how he felt about, not just about how BMC rode, but also about how the future of the Tour Down Under stands with the Aussie domination. A lot of what we've already been talking about, but Alan Piper, he's the man. He's a real expert. He knows his stuff. But Stay tuned and come back after the break, but you're listening to What a Ride. there, Aaron, with that piece of music. You're listening to What a Ride, yes, with Aaron S. Lee and myself, Rupert Guinness. Aaron's over in the States and I'm in here in sunny Sydney, Australia. We're talking about the Two Down Under, the fallout of the first World Tour event of the year. The Two Down Under is the only Australian event, or the only event which is an Australian event which is on the World Tour. As always, there's talk about the future of the race, where it stands, where it's good, where it's not so good, where it can improve, what the riders think about it, what they don't think about. Anyway, as we said before the break, we're going to talk to Alan Piper, who's the sport manager of the US BMC team for whom Rowan Dennis and fellow Australian Richie Porte ride for. Alan Piper, for those who don't know him, he's a long time personality of the sport, a former professional on the old Peugeot team in the mid-early 80s. Then he went on to Panasonic. He was a teammate of Phil Anderson's there. And then he rode for teams like Tulip, and he's been living in Belgium all his life. He's almost part Belgian, I'd say. And certainly he knows a thing or two about sport and where events stand around the world. He's also a great sports director. There's not much more. He's just good at so many things. But anyway, we spoke to Alan Piper. But before we get in to listen to Alan Piper, Aaron, what's your feeling about Alan Piper and what he contributes to the sport?
Well, I tell you, it's always a great opportunity when you get a chance to sit down and pick the brain of Alan Piper. Guys like Rowan Dennis and Richie Porte now they're very lucky to have a guy like Alan Piper to bounce ideas off of and to learn from. And I'm expecting some really good things by both riders this year because of him.
You're dead on there, dead on, Aaron. That's what I'm expecting too. So enough of us talking about Alan Piper. Let's listen to the man himself, and I hope you enjoy his insights into the Two Down Under, its future, and also a bit more about Rowan Dennis and Richie Porte.
First up, you know, with the Aussie success here of the Two Down Under, these three stages and all but the teams and climbers' jersey, has this race become sort of out of reach for the European guys, and could that deter European riders from wanting to come here? Do all the Aussies are all on form to the nationals?
I don't think it will deter them from coming because, you know, it's good weather, it's good training ground, it's a good way to start your season. It's more difficult for the Europeans to come here in good shape. But I think the biggest thing is motivation, and not the fact that they're not motivated for the Tour Down Under, but the fact that this is an Australian home race, very much the same as the French riding their own home races or the Belgians riding their own home races. And that's the big motivating factor for a lot of riders. When they're riding their own home races, they're motivated, they focus on those races and they peak for those races. And that's probably, in every country this happens, the country that's hosting the race has their riders stand out. I won't say as much as at this race, because I think this year's been quite unique in the Australian sense.
Unique because of the success is unique, or
yeah, your success is unique. I mean, actually, you know, Orica Green Edge has been a dominating force the whole week, from the Criterium to the Criterium. I mean, they've won nearly everything in between, you know, apart from Richie Porte winning on Wollongong. So, you know, that gives it another Australian flavour as well.
Yeah. Just bearing on Richie Porte, were you surprised with the form he had in Wollongong, or is it what you expected? Was he riding on motivation because it's Wollongong Hill, because he's won there twice before, or was it a level of performance that he was reaching or nearing?
Well, firstly, you know, Richie's only been in our team a couple of months, been at one training camp, and you know, at the end of last year, didn't ride so much with an injury and had a sort of a late start to training. So the expectation wasn't quite as high of, you know, where he was going to be. And we backed Rowan from the start as past winner and coming from Adelaide. And then, you know, it sorted itself out on Wollongong and Richie won. But I think, you know, him winning on Wollongong was, I won't say a surprise, but at the same time, his level of confidence surprised me. You know, that he would go into that stage and say, I can win this tomorrow, you know. And And I think, you know, you don't see that very often in a rider who has that a certain cockiness to say, you know, I'm going to do this, you know. He was already giving me the thumbs up at 100 kilometres to go, and I was thinking, is he saying hello to me, or is he sure he's going to win today? I mean, you know, it's not many riders can sort of be that cocky and pull it off as well, you know.
Yeah, yeah. You happy to see that?
Oh, yes. 100%, yeah, because, you know, you've got to, and as we talked this week, you know, he's been in great teams before, but not essentially as the leader in, you know, a Grand Tour. So him building his squad around him and getting that confidence of them to ride for him comes also from that cockiness and his leadership, you know.
I guess now he focuses on, he stays here till February 12th, just training in Tassie.
Yep.
And builds up to Paris Nice.
He's going doing Oman on the way back.
Oman, yes.
From Australia to Europe, so that'll be sort of a good stop for him.
Yeah.
And then back to Paris Nice and a build up. But, you know, he started here and you know, less shape than he was last year. But obviously he's come out pretty good because he's only 9 seconds behind. But we do want to try and stagger him a little bit. It's a long way to the Tour de France, especially if you're in great shape in January.
Just lastly, Rowan, obviously on the Wollonga stage, he put his hand up and said to Richo he hasn't got the legs today. Was that a concern that he didn't have the legs? And that was just an aberration?
No, it was a concern. He didn't have the legs already the day before, let's put it this way. He felt the warm breath of Hanau down his neck, and he said, look, he's probably going to pass me in the GC anyway, so why don't we come up with a plan? And it was actually Rowan's plan to do it that way. We sat in the room the night before with Rowan and Richie and discussed it, and then we ran it past the rest of the team the next morning before the Wollonga stage about what the boys wanted to do, and everyone was behind it. Everyone thought it was a good plan, you know, with the possibility that we're going to end up with absolutely nothing, that he might be blown out of the water, Richie mightn't pull it off, and we'd have empty hands after a week, you know. But, you know, I think the motivating factor of Rowan doing that on Saturday was also because Richie sacrificed for him on Corkscrew, more or less waiting for him looking after Rowan, who was the designated leader. And for me, that was the big winning situation of this week, that Richie did that, and then Rowan was prepared to sacrifice his place for Richie Saturday. Now we move into the rest of the races, the rest of the season, and Richie's going to have an absolute number one lieutenant moving forwards.
Yeah, in Rowan.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great for a long-term point of view.
Exactly.
It? Yeah.
You're listening to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee. We just listened before the break to Alan Piper, the sports manager of the BMC team. Hope you enjoyed what he said. I certainly loved hearing it again. He's the sort of guy you could just sit there and talk all day. But we're talking about different personalities in the Two Down Under this year, and one of whom that Aaron knows as well is the former rower, Sean Lake. Now, Sean Lake made his World Tour debut by riding for the UniSA Australia national team. He managed to get into that team through his terrific performances at the National Road Championships, where he got third in the men's elite time trial at Buninyong on a podium which included the winner Rowan Dennis and his Australian teammate Richie Port. So that's some calibre up there on the podium there. Sean Lake is a former rower, as I said. He was a lightweight rower. Three times he represented Australia in the under 23 World Championships. He had some struggles getting down to weight, so he took to cycling, which a lot of rowers do, because that's part of their training as well. You know, I wrote a story for the Sydney Morning Herald on Sean Lake, but Aaron, you wrote a very nice feature on him just recently yourself. What are your impressions of Sean and what he can do?
Yeah, I was able to catch up with him right after his podium finish there for the individual time trial at the Australian Road Nationals and for Eurosport. And what a great kid. Again, you mentioned crossover sports star. It seems to be something we've got a lot in common with a lot of the athletes that we're talking about today. Jay McCarthy and Richie Port, former triathletes. We mentioned Michael Woods, former middle distance runner. Cadell Evans, we mentioned Ryder Hagendahl even, both former mountain bike champions. And obviously to see Sean Lake with an amazing engine come over from, I believe it was African Wildlife Safari's team last year. But what an amazing kid with a lot of power. And in talking to Andrew Christie Johnston, the team owner and sports director, you know, this could be one of the best that's coming out of that lot that includes guys like Richie Port, Campbell Flakemore, Jack Craig, Haig, Nathan Haas, Nathan Earl, Will Clark, the list goes on. But this guy could be the real deal.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, also credit to his coach, Mark Fenner, who he's been coaching the last few months. So he's certainly managed to turn around that engine pretty well, hasn't he?
Hey, you know, you got to love Mark Fenner. If you spend a little time with him at any time, of course, he's a great guy. He spent a lot of time with British Cycling before he came over to Australia. He owns the FTP Training there in Nowra, along with the Watts Factory. And, of course, on any given day in the off-season, you can go there and you'll see the Avanti racing team there, but you'll also see guys like Steel Von Hoff or Nathan Earl or those guys training there as well. There's a lot of respect and a lot of credibility goes in with Mark Fenner. And I'll tell you, I think even Bridie O'Donnell, who took the women's hour record, even gave him credit as well. I'm not sure of the relationship there, but obviously there's a coaching connection there. And of course, Mark Fenner, I have to laugh because every time I'm around, he's a very excited guy, even more so than me. And his famous word is frothing. He's always frothing, and I love that word, and I try to work it in as many times as I can throughout the course of a day, and I always think about Finns.
Well, listen, at the Two Down Under, I caught up with Sean Lake just actually the day before the race started, and just spoke to him about his transition into cycling from rowing, also what he was hoping for in the race. Okay, we did this interview before the race started, but the day after, stage one, the first breakaway of the day, he went straight from the gun in true UniSA Australia Dave Sanders style, and he stayed away for all but the last few kilometres of the stage, and he went away with a four-man break, then it came down to three and two, and then he was on his own for like 90 kilometres on his own, and that was a fantastic way for him to sort of make a debut in a World Tour race. So I had a chat with Sean, and this is what he had to say about him, his hopes, his life, why he gave up rowing, and where he sees his place in the world of cycling.
Nationals, like the Nationals, right? In that podium time trial, it was, it's been, 2 weeks now. Have you had time to sort of absorb your feat that day? I know at the time you were pretty thrilled.
Yeah, I think, I guess getting selected into the Uni SA team was something as well to absorb, and I'd say both of those things are actually still sinking in, and I guess that realisation from that time trial that I reckon I do have a shot against these big guys, so.
Yeah. In the road race, you had a good race, though, too, didn't you? You're pretty happy with how you went?
Yeah, I was fairly happy with the road race, sort of managing to get the job done for the team, stay up the front of the road. It got a little bit complicated with Bobridge going and the Orica Green Edge guys in the break, which we were following, meant we sort of missed the race a little bit, but I was still quite happy with that performance.
And tell me, with your rowing, when did you stop rowing and go into the cycling?
So I stopped rowing, I think it was about just over 2 years ago now.
Okay.
I stopped rowing just because I was struggling to make the lightweight ranks, and I took a year to sort of recoup and regenerate my body and sort of have a crack at heavyweight, but then I ended up falling in love with cycling racing, and one thing led to another.
Okay. Like a lot of lightweight rowers, were you cycling as part of your training?
We'd still be doing about 250 k's a week of cycling and one long ride on the weekend with the rowing training.
Okay. You went to under 23 worlds, didn't you?
So for rowing, I did 3 years in the under 23 Australian team, and I spent 1 year living at the Australian Institute of Sport in Canberra.
Okay.
Things were looking quite well from the outside, but on the inside, I was just struggling to keep it going.
Were you during that struggle? Were you still hoping to make the Olympics in the lightweight form?
Absolutely. That's where I was focused on with rowing. It was get to the Olympics one day, and that's where longevity really became an issue, because I was, although I reckon I believe I was a chance for the Rio, it was really looking further ahead to 2020 where I had my real opportunities in rowing, and I just knew that I wasn't going to be able to last that long.
Okay. Which club did you row for?
I was Mercantile Rowing Club.
Okay, Believe it or not, I used to be a lightweight rower.
Oh.
Many kilos ago, so I know about the struggle and all.
Okay,
that.
Yep.
That's sort of going to let you know. Because a lot of people don't understand that as small percentage of being in or being out.
Yep.
It's one or the other, isn't it?
And
the whole thing of getting a crew together and getting underweight and all that. So. With cycling, obviously it's a sport where you need to eat.
Yeah.
Is that one of the sort of the add-on benefits of cycling? I know you love just riding a bike anyway, but I mean...
Having no weigh-in in cycling is definitely a benefit, and although there is always that balance to try and hit your best power to weight ratio, even though for me I'm not a pure climber, it is always a factor, but you get to be at that level where you are as strong as you can be, which is an important factor for me.
Bear in mind that I guess over the years, in the years to come, the more racing you do on the road, your body's probably going to still strip down naturally, isn't it?
The t-shirts that I was wearing when I was rowing are a little bit loose on me now, so I really hope that trend keeps going and means I can just be sort of naturally lighter with a bit less muscle mass on top. So over time, long term, I'll be able to go up hills quicker.
Yeah, for this race, obviously you've won one draft of Noonbrook. You had a great, you've got the Brodman time trial, you had the elite road race, now you're in a world tour event. It's a massive shift, isn't it? Do you have any sort of expectations do you have, or are there any apprehensions?
I guess the race last night was an opener. These guys race very differently, and it is just next level fast. But I think from my experience, I can just try and put myself in that early break, and hope that the peloton never sees it again, or as well as that, be able to help my teammates for a few of the stages. So
I guess you see, obviously Dave is a guy who's unafraid of getting you guys to get into the deep water and just have a crack. You know, that's a great nature of this team.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a few of the guys have said show them all respect, but absolutely not fear them. And I think we'll go out with that in mind and definitely take it to them by being aggressive. Riders like me getting in the break, and some of the other guys giving Steele a great lead out, and he's a world class rider.
Yeah. There's a lot of people who still think Steele could be in the World Tour team, you know, the right opportunity again and stuff like that.
Oh, no doubt, he's a fully class rider, and we're absolutely stoked to have him at UniSA. So
How do you think, you know, when you were still running, did you sort of follow cycling, like read about it and watch it?
Yeah, at first I didn't really, but by my last year of rowing, I was sort of getting, I guess, a little bit addicted to the, you know, all the little bits of it, the technology, the style, and you know, interest in racing, and was definitely watching the tour from the hotel room while getting ready for the rowing world. So
yeah. And how do you feel? I mean, is there a certain sort of rider that one you admire the most, and maybe is there a rider that you sort of style yourself off of it, who you think you have similar traits to, that would be a good example to follow?
I guess there's a few. It's hard to put a name on, like, because I guess a few of the classic specialists I'd definitely like to emulate, as well as some of those, you know, time trial specialists, because at the moment I guess I'm sort of, you know, in between, around both those fields. So I haven't really thought about one specific rider to model on.
Would you like to turn professional? That's the goal.
Yeah, absolutely. The goal is to become professional, and you know, that's what I'd love to do with my life at this point in time.
Hence, you know, like obviously time trials, like we had at the Nationals, they get noticed. I mean, obviously performances on the road and stages get noticed as well.
Yeah.
But the time trial shows you've got the engine, it shows you've got the discipline and the focus that teams, whether it's World Tour or Pro Conti, they want riders like that.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's one of the reasons why I love time trials. It's kind of similar to rowing. You know what you put in and control all the factors, and you know, you get the performance out from what you put in.
Yeah. Now, after the time trial, did Richie or Rowan have a word to you at all?
Yeah, had a good couple of words with Richie and Rowan. Richie sort of just asking, you know, how old I was, and having a chat, I think, to the other guys and his manager and stuff, and you know, saying that I've still definitely got an opportunity to make a big career, I think.
Okay, and I guess this week is obviously a great week, a great stage to be able to sort of showcase what you've got to these teams as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, super great opportunity. And I'm fully looking to take it with both hands.
And just lastly, last two questions. The Olympic dream is still there for you, though, isn't it? Could be just cycling now.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one day down the track, you know, maybe in the time trial or something, that's still definitely a dream in my head.
Do you still miss rowing? When you go past riding on your bike, you may go past a nice, beautiful bit of water. Do you get that sort of sense of...
I don't miss so much being in the boat, but I do still do a bit of coaching, and I think that satisfies it for me. It's a bit nicer being on the other side of the megaphone.
Okay. Who are you coaching? One of the schools?
Just a school year 10 crew. Year 10 first at St. Catherine's School.
Okay. And is it... where are they in the year now? They'd be training. Are they going to be going to Nationals?
Yeah, so I literally just came from their rowing camp before coming over here to Adelaide.
Did you really?
I spent 2 days at their rowing camp in Nagambi, yep.
Oh, good on you, mate. How's the crew going?
Yeah, I think they're actually a hot shot for the head of schoolgirls this year.
Okay.
It's a small school and definitely on the up, and some talented girls coming through.
Okay, when's that regatta on?
It's, I think, to start on first weekend of March.
Okay.
Welcome back to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee. You've just been listening to one of the new faces of the Peloton, and hopefully he'll be a full-time member of the World Tour Peloton, but he made his World Tour debut for the UniSA Australia team, Sean Lake. Aaron, when you listen to Sean speak, I mean, you can't help but feel for his enthusiasm. One thing I would like to add myself is throughout the whole race, whenever I saw him, he had this massive grin. You could tell he was just loving it. He was loving the hurt. He was loving the pain. You know, you could still see the rower in him. Anyway, well, so how did you feel about listening to Sean Lake there?
Oh, well, it is.
is exciting. As you said, you can really, even through the audio, you can feel the excitement that he has. You know, it wasn't unlike talking to Patty Bevin throughout the week. We talked to some of the Neo Pros, Michael Woods and those guys, who are all making their World Tour debuts or their debuts at a World Tour race. And you know, one of the things that it makes me excited about the future of the sport, and it gets me excited as an old dog covering the sport. It gets me excited about what's to come, and it's great. You know, one of the things about Sean being a former rower, you know, there's, we made no secret, you're a former rower, and just to kind of help me understand it for the people listening at home that might not be as familiar with the sport, why do rowers usually cross over to become such excellent bicyclists?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. One, a lot of the training they do is in rowing is threshold training. You know, doing efforts of repeated efforts on the water of ranging from 250 meter pieces to 500 meter pieces or 1,000s. You know, so it's very much reaching your threshold very quickly and holding it and then dropping back and then doing these repeated efforts. So your physiological makeup is attuned in a similar way as a track endurance rider is, and we've seen a lot of track endurance riders being able to become very good road cyclists. So the physiological makeup is very similar, particularly in those formative years for a rower when you're young and you're developing. So as your physiology develops when you're young, it becomes a natural sort of thing to be able to endure pain for a while. I'm really making it sound much simpler than probably what it is. I'm sure Mark Fenner would be horrified at my pretty poor explanation of it, but that's how my take on it is. I mean, you know, obviously I wasn't a Sean Lakin rowing or anything like that, but I used to row lightweight many kilos ago, and then I took to cycling, and then got into triathlons, and I found, you know, Ironman triathlon was a great event for me. So in a bizarre way, I enjoyed that sort of endurance part of it. But I think we've seen a lot of rowers switch over because also they do a lot of cycling as part of their training. As Sean Lake said, you know, when they were rowing, doing all their on-water stuff and all their gym stuff, they also did about 250 kilometres a week of cycling on top of all their other rowing commitments. So it's a part of their training as well. So, and it also helps create team bonding, the sense of riding a bike in a group. They do it with their crewmates or with other rowers, so there was the transition. Really, is almost seamless in many ways.
Well, one of the things about it, talking to him and talking to Andrew Christie Johnson a few weeks ago, one thing that they both acknowledge is that I think he's around 185 centimeters in height, and he's about 78 to 80 kilos in weight. And that's the one thing they both agreed on, that he would have to maybe shave some of that down to get that cycling body to help him long term. But right now, he was looking at a third place finish in the individual time trial behind winner Rowan Dennis and last year's winner Richie Port. That's not bad company for a 24-year-old. And for what it's worth, he spent a day in the mountains jersey after stage one at the Tour Down Under.
Yeah, exactly. It's actually, they were saying how it's probably better at this time of his cycling career to be ahead of the peloton than rather in it, because in a World Tour peloton, because he's obviously still got to develop some of the finesse of riding in a bunch. But it's not for me to I'm not criticising him, but it's just I think with experience he'll adapt to life in a World Tour peloton better. But obviously he's going to have a massive season with the National Road Series riding for Avanti Isoway, and I'm sure by the end of this season, and he's already had a couple of seasons in the NRS, you know, that with time and experience, the bike handling skills will be sharpened, and I'm sure we'll see, we'll be hearing a lot and talking a lot more about him by the end of the year.
Absolutely.
Now, we're going to take a little break. You're listening to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee. When we come back, we're going to take a little break. We'll listen to some music, and when we come back, instead of talking about something new, we're going to talk about something old. Stay tuned.
Man goes dancing, you know she dances while his father
Listening to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee. Now, before that last bit of music, I said we've been listening to something new about Shaun Lake, and we've been listening about something old. Well, with old means age and time, experience, like a good full-bodied red wine, bottle of red wine.
Don't try to backtrack now, Rupert.
I'm talking about one of the elder statesmen of the World Tour Peloton, 2012 Giro d'Italia winner, Canadian cycling star, and when I say old, he's not old. I'm old. I'm 53. But Ryder Hesjedal, at the age of 36, I think, he's certainly one of the elder members of the peloton. He's a wise old fox as well, and he's part of the Tour Down Under memories that Aaron and I both share. And you know, Aaron does his diary for Cyclist magazine, and he was he was there at the Tour Down Under, Aaron, every night, just coming down to do his diary and sort of engage with the journalists for a bit of good old rider chat. You were in touch with Ryder during the Two Down Under. How did you feel, how he, you know, felt about the race and where he was tracking?
Well, you know, first of all, let me correct you and say that Ryder's only 35 years old. And he just turned 35 December 9th. Just for the record.
Well, there you go. Thank you. You know, obviously you're going to edit this bit out, aren't you? But no, you probably won't now. Look, put it this way. I just see a lot of wisdom in Ryder, you know.
Absolutely. And, of course, he's got one hell of a palmetto to show for it as well. Obviously, he's a three-time Olympian, two on the road, one in mountain bike. I believe he won a mountain bike world championship as a junior. He competed a long time when, you know, back in the air right afterwards, after Cadell, he competed one of those, as we mentioned earlier, the mountain bikers turned successful road cyclists. He won the Giro d'Italia in 2012, the first year he visited Australia and the Tour Down Under. He's now been back to the TDU for the past two seasons. And, of course, last year, as he said, you know, earlier in the week, that, you know, it worked out for him last year because he had won a hell of a ride at the Giro in the third week, and as well as the Tour de France.
Yeah, yeah, and actually just going back to the year he won the Giro, I remember he was, and we were having a chat to him, you know, I was having a chat to him in the press room at the TDU just about that year, and when he came into the Tour de France after that Giro, in the 2012 Tour de France, he was absolutely flying. He looked so comfortable on the bike, his cadence was beautiful, he just looked so much more relaxed, and I thought, gee, this guy really is going to give this Tour a shake, you know, coming off his Giro win, and unfortunately he had a crash and he crashed out, and you've got to, I mean, he would have been probably at the purple patch of his career, and we'll never know. But you know what? It's when you just go through his career, as you just explained it then, Aaron, it really shows his versatility, and he's been at the top end of each of those disciplines.
Oh, absolutely. Of course, he's he's finished in 2010, fifth on GC at the Tour de France. He's won the Giro, as we mentioned. He's won stage races, two stage races at the Giro, two at the Vuelta. He is very keen and interested in participating in his fourth Olympiad this year in Rio, which will be, of course, again, as we said, third on the road. An amazing athlete, and always fun to have him at the Tour Down Under and visiting. You mentioned we were doing the Daily Diary again this year, which we started last year with him for Canadian Cycling Magazine, and of course, with me not being able to be there this year, it was great chatting with him over the phone, but there were a couple of days there, two or three days, where I wasn't able to get in touch with him right away, and you filled in tremendously for me. It's probably a couple, and we're not only able to talk to Ryder, we were able to post some audio interviews along with those stories, and of course people can go back on Canadian Cycling Magazine and check those out from last week as well. But it was great. It's always fun talking to Ryder. He's an interesting character, isn't he?
Oh, he certainly is. He certainly is. And I find that the sort of character, the more time you spend with him, the more interesting he gets. And I know that me putting my foot in it by calling him old, it's going to come back on me. And Ryder, I know if you're listening to this, if you're going to say something like, if you're old, what am I? Well,
yeah, exactly.
I'm going to have to live with that, my friend.
I'll be tweeting that quote pretty soon.
Oh, no, look, I don't do Twitter, remember, so I'll never see it. Now, I think I had a chat with Ryder, you know, at the very beginning of the Two Down Under. You've listened to that tape, Aaron. Maybe just give our listeners a little bit of a lead in as to what he spoke about and what they're about to hear.
Well, no, absolutely. Of course, Ryder talks about the upcoming 2016 season and about his goals, which are, again, to compete for a Giro result and a podium, potentially a win. Again, he's had a lot of success at that race. In the past, one of the things going into this season was the potential that he was going to end his career last year, following 2015 with Cannondale Garmin. And of course, he is stuck around. He signed on with a new team with Trek Segafredo, which he talks about in the interview. And we get a little bit more about his new motivation. He's a bit fired up. He's excited to race again, and he's not ruling out even another run in 2017. But first and foremost, he wants to get past 2016, and he's got some goals that he wants to achieve.
Well, heck, it sounds like there's a lot of new about Ryder Hegedal.
Not old at all.
We were going to put him straight back into the new faces category. You've heard it here on What a Ride. But now, how about let's have a listen to what Ryder had to say rather than listen to what Aaron S. Lee had to say about Ryder and for me to get my foot out of my mouth. Here's Ryder Hegedal, the man himself, the new face of cycling?
You were here last year, obviously you got a lot out of the race. It seemed to work for you. It set you up well for the year. Is that why you've come back here?
Yeah, for sure. Just simply to start the season in January. I said already a few times it's perfect to come down here, hit the summer season. For me, obviously, coming from Hawaii, it works well. I'm already in that kind of climate, so just fits into the training perfectly, but also just a great opportunity to get the season started as soon as possible, certainly with Trek Segafredo now, new team, and just get rolling. So I did it in 12. It worked well. I did it last year. It worked well. So, you try and replicate that stuff as much as you can. That's simply it.
Ryder, obviously, everyone talks about how a change of teams can freshen you up and can freshen any athlete up. Can you explain a little bit about how you feel? You've had one hit out in the People's Choice Criterium. You've got that race under your belt. Do you feel any more settled into that sort of black and white of the Trek suit?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, already we started in December in Benidorm, the whole group together. And, just a great group of guys, great team. Trek's an amazing bike company. I mean, that's for sure. And obviously Segafredo coming on board just strengthens the team and shows they're moving in a good direction. So just really happy to be a part of that and just settled in immediately. So to already have got a race in. We weren't with Jack when he won the national championship, but to have that win already down here, and last night Giacomo did a really good sprint and really only got beat by arguably the best criterium rider in the world, I would say. So, we're happy and we'll look to get the most out of the race in the next days.
This year's course is a little bit different than last year. We haven't got the Paracomb climb where Rowan Dennis won last year, but you've got the corkscrew back in. I guess you've trained on the corkscrew, haven't you? So you sort of are au fait with it?
Yeah, first time I saw it out in training. I wasn't here at the race when they introduced it, so it's a tough climb for sure. You're going to see the first deciding part of the race, and I think we have guys that can be there, so for me, it's to be determined, on my line of training, and we'll see when the racing gets going, and I think that's the theme for most guys. I mean, it's hard to tell where everybody's at this early in the year, but it's just about getting the most you can out of the race, and I think we're well built to get the most out of all the race, not just one in particular stage.
Obviously, Ryder, you've got your bigger goals ahead of you with the Giro and then Tour de France. I mean, do you feel that if there was any opportunity in the Tour Down Under, it's just too early in the system for you to, and maybe the course is not decisive enough or challenging enough for you to be able to put your strengths into best operation?
Yeah, well, I mean, for sure. I mean, there's going to be no, 6-hour mountain stage deep in a 3-week situation here, that's for sure. But you never know. I'm definitely ahead of last year. It's all based on the season before where you finish. I finished much later in 14 and needed to take the break and start again. So the timing is quite a bit ahead of that this year. So I'm ahead of where I was at this point last year. So we'll see what that means on the road in the race. But yeah, there's still the eyes on May and maybe a month or so before that coming into top shape. So for sure there's guys in top condition here and you have to be realistic.
You're listening to Water Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee, and you've just been listening to Ryder Hesjedal, Canadian cycling legend, who's got a lot ahead of him, judging by what he told us in that interview during the Tour Down Under. Now, we're getting towards that part of the show. We're getting towards the end. We hope you enjoyed this episode. There's still so much more to come. It seems like we've been right into the season for so long now, but we're only still at the start. Aaron, okay, what are your movements? What are your aspirations and thoughts just for the next sort of immediate future?
Well, the most immediate future is it is literally about 5:30 p.m. here in New Orleans, so it is time for a vino, perhaps, or a ice cold beer. I'm not sure which, but that's probably the most immediate
thing that I'm thinking about. As far as movements, not sure. Looking at Langkawi, possibly. Not sure on that one yet. I was thinking that was a sure deal, but you just kind of informed me before the show that maybe my flight's in question. So I'll find that out and then get back to you. But I'm excited about this weekend. Obviously, the Cadell Evans Great Ocean Road Race. That was a race that you and I both attended last year. We're obviously, from what I understand, you're not going this year. I'm obviously not still here in the U.S. But it's a race that I'm keen to see grow. It's going to be a little different this year because Cadell's not going to be racing. That was his last race as a professional last year to end his illustrious career. This year, the race has had a lot of rain, as you mentioned earlier. I know in a press conference, Cadell joked yesterday that he was most concerned about the road washing away, but he did ride the circuit and ride the course and said everything was A-okay and was expecting some pretty good weather and obviously some great racing conditions. Mark Cavendish is going to be on hand. We mentioned Ryder Heijndal earlier. He's going to be there with a bit of a different Trek squad. The only one remaining besides Ryder from the TDU units is Jack Bowbridge, who, of course, had an amazing run there at the Australian National Road Race Championships to just blow everyone away with a solo victory. But, I'm kind of looking forward to the Cadell Evans race. What about you?
Yeah, look, I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to be up in Sydney, obviously. I'm going to watch it on TV, so I'm going to enjoy the corporate box, which will be my lounge room. Immediate scenes. I'm just about to go into the Sydney Morning Herald office and sign off on my 9 years and 3 weeks there, just to hand in my pass, my laptop and my iPhone, a bit like you see in the movies, the detective handing in his gun and his badge. But I'm not handing mine in for any bad reason. I've taken a voluntary redundancy to pursue new projects in the world of cycling and sport. And so hopefully, you know, I'm going to be more into the cycling than what I have been in recent years. So I'm looking really forward to the future. As for races, you never know. Aaron, our paths could cross at Langkawi if all the stars are aligned. But if not, I'm sure they'll cross soon. And I'm looking forward to I hope I'll get to the classics this year. I haven't been back for a few years. That's where I'd love to do, to go to Flanders and Roubaix again. And then I guess the pathway will be the Giro and the Tour, and then see where I end up on the second half of the year. But there's a lot of racing to go before then. I've got to finish a book by the end of February on the history of cycling, which, that's a deadline. It's 6 weeks away, but 6 weeks pass very quickly in the world of book writing.
I've got to say, Chapeau for an amazing run at the Sydney Morning Herald in Fairfax. You did an amazing job. You were always a great friend and a great colleague there. I look forward to seeing you maybe a little bit more, hopefully on the cycling side again, and then obviously wishing you well for all your future endeavors there, bud.
Look, thanks very much, Aaron. It's been a pleasure to work at Fairfax. It's been a great some great times there. So certainly my experience at Fairfax will go into the memory bank under great memories and great times. Aaron,
it has been the longest departure I've ever seen, for the record.
Enough of that. I've got my farewell due tonight, so I'm glad we're not recording this tomorrow. I'd probably have a horrible hangover. But Aaron, it's been great as always talking with you on this show. I know we've just got this show up and going soon. Hey, another thing I wouldn't mind, perhaps next week or the week after, we would love to go back and maybe talk about Bridie O'Donnell's our record. You mentioned that earlier. Congratulations, Bridie, a great ride there. We'd love to come back and perhaps go through that in a bit more detail, and also have a look at the World Tour, the Women's World Tour as well. So there's a lot happening there. So if you want to hear more about the World Tour and Bridie's experience, her World Hour record, because unfortunately we only mentioned it tonight on this show, and maybe we'll look also at the Women's World Tour that kicks off this year. So there's a lot happening in the women's peloton for sure. Rest assured, if you're wondering why we haven't spoken about it in depth yet, be assured that we will in one of our upcoming editions of What a Ride. Aaron, it's been great as always. One last word from you, just to tell us anything you feel like, within reason.
Always a pleasure, Rube. Always a pleasure indeed. And just out there, as we mentioned earlier in the episode,
everyone take care of each other out there on the road, and remember, a meter matters.
Superbly said, Aaron. Hope you enjoyed this episode of What a Ride. It's me, Rupert Guinness, and Aaron S. Lee signing off once more. Stay tuned, and as Aaron said, stay safe, a meter matters, and keep smiling. It's a great life.
Show me how you do that trick, the one that makes me scream.